So we are going to talk a little bit about the work we did together. It doesn't work. A work we did together before I moved on to cluster management and Peter moved on to maps, actually, which was when we improved a little bit, a lot actually, our infrastructure of load balancing. We basically, like, there are many ways you can use load balancing, but not only to balance load of services, but it has a very crucial it plays a crucial part in making sure that your service is available, and that includes like failing over, right? It's not about like just having a bunch of machines doing exactly the same thing and sharing the load between them. So large scale failures, like a whole site or a whole building or something like that, it happens. And that, if you want to deal with that manually, it always creates a lot of trouble, like how editing DNS configurations and all this stuff, and like or changing configuration in the clients, which is even more painful. We were talking here about configuration management more to a client land, and we know how that can be really a lot of work, and it takes time, and time is money, right? So also, if you are working in a traditional load balancing configuration, a normal setup, and you have this failback locations, whenever your site fails, you have this other place that your connections will go to. But if this place fails, or if there is a change management thing going on in that other place, you have to go back to your load balancer and make sure that this machine will know about what's going on in the other side. Otherwise, you might end up in trouble as well. And yeah, it's a lot of manual interaction. And other thing, while we were looking into solutions for these problems, because we wanted to automate that, we wanted to the load balancers to know what was available and not, and all this, we found a lot of like traditional Anycast deployments that actually enable peering for Anycast in all the nodes. Like, imagine if you have 300 DNS servers and all of them are part of the Anycast peering service, that gets a little bit messy, doesn't scale, and each time you want to add a service or more nodes, you might end up having to configure again your network environment, and that's like not really nice. So it's down and up, not okay. So the failover techniques that we usually have, like, we always deploy load balancing in pairs for obvious reasons. We don't want to have a single point of failure. But if one of your servers behind the load balancer fail, that's fine. If you have like the some configuration to send people to another site in case all of your backends fail, which is the other picture there, then you are also fine because your load balancer can proxy those configurations, or like if you have a double net, but it's not. So what happened is, like, what happens when you actually your load balancer fails itself? Then you get into that situation, DNS configs or client configuration modifications, because the load balancer is the one that was taking care of all this for you. So you have a user impact. For that, we started, like, we looked into Anycast, because that enables us to have like a bunch of hosts for each service sharing the same IP address, and the clients trying to reach that will just go to the nearest host. And if we enable this, so basically the way that we have a lot of different things. I don't know if it was clear in the paper and if you had a chance to read the paper, but basically we deploy this for all of our corporate infrastructure. It's not like Google.com or Maps or all this thing, but it's like the services that Google, the business Google runs to actually provide service to our internal our employees. And so we have offices which are like single buildings, and in this setup we just have like a load, like normal LDAP or whatever services that we have deployed locally behind the load balancers. Some places, like I don't know if you visited the campus here in Mountain View, but we have some others in other locations as well, that we have multiple buildings, and sometimes happens that you have a power failure or something in one of the buildings, but you want still, you cannot just hope that will not be the building that has all your servers, right? You have to do something about that. And then we have data centers as well, which like the corporate data centers that keeps like a little bit larger deployments of all the services that we need. Not all the offices have the same subset of services, so it's a little bit more complicated. So what we did is like actually we had this idea to implement Anycast to make our life easier for the failover situation and not having to edit all this config. But nothing, we are actually, that would be nice to have until the time that we actually had a failure that was a whole building failure in one of our campuses that is a sales campus. So it's a lot of people that bring company lots of money. And then they said, we can't depend in one of the buildings. If one of the buildings just shuts down, the other one has to continue to work. So basically we got like a little more encouragement from management to actually solve this problem quickly. So if either an office or a campus goes down, like the load balancing goes down with Anycast, we automatically redirect them to one of the regional data centers. And then all the clients, it's transparent to the clients basically. And we actually choose to use BGP for our setup because it allowed us to create some hierarchy in the configuration, and not everybody has to know, like not all the devices need to know about all the peers that are part of the oh my god, Anycast peering stuff. So we did, so each location, one of the things that is very common, like I don't know, at Google we have one team taking care of each service. So we have like a LDAP team, an SMTP team, a proxy team, and we have a load balancing team as well. And so we provide load balancing as a service to all these other services, these other service owners. So they come to us and they say, this is what I need. What can you provide to me? And this allowed us to actually enable the Anycast feature only in this, reduce a lot the amount of peers in the network, because first you have in this, you have two load balancers per location, and it's active passive, so it's actually one load balancer per location, advertising routes instead of having like per service, I don't know how many, and things like that. Also, since the load balancer already works, having like checking state of all the backends and stuff, the number of changes in the routing is much lower, because only when there is a complete site failure that we will actually have someone getting off the peering, the BGP peering. I forgot the word. I'm sorry about that. But yeah, only when a full site goes off that site will say, I'm not part of your BGP peering list anymore, and then the routers just make it disappear. It tolerates, if the load balancer also dies, it will tolerate that failure. We don't need to, if the data center goes down, then it will also know about that, so we don't have to care about like a schedule for PCRs. PCRs is not a common industry term, sorry, a change management. So we don't have to know that these things are happening, because the system gets automatically updated. And we don't need to, in the case of the load balancing failing itself, we also don't have to do anything for that to for our infrastructure to continue to work. Another thing that doing the Anycast on the load balancing is one of the things that a lot of people say against Anycast is that you cannot use that with TCP services, because you request something here, and then when you see you are like somewhere else. So if you put that in in the load balancer. The load balancer can handle that. In our case, we choose to not keep like a share connection tables, but you can do that if you want. And if the whole site fails and that will break a TCP connection, but if the client goes there and reload, it will not be broken anymore because it takes like 2 seconds to update the routing table. It's much better than having to manual go there and do something about it. So it's still a better solution. And the service turning it to a service, as I said, Peter will talk a little bit about the software implementation, but basically what we did, we just choose like a bunch of software that would allow us to create basically isolate the VIPs as much as we could. Like if a configuration is broken for one of the services, we'll not break everybody else. Like we have a centralized management because it's a single group taking care of this. It's not like a one load balancer for HTTP, one load balancer for LDAP, and wouldn't make sense. You don't even, it's like a overkill. Like you have this powerful machine sometimes for doing this, and then you get, when you see what people use them for, it's a joke the amount of load that you put if you put just one single service per load balancer, right? And for the service owner itself, if I take care of LDAP, why do I have to know how a load balancer works, right? Let someone else take care of that. And I think that's basically it for the rationale.
Yep. So I'm going to run through quickly our software implementation for this setup. We run on Linux servers with a purely open source software stack using Heartbeat, LDirectD, and Quagga, as you can see here. Heartbeat is the active-passive cluster management software. We use that to make sure LDirectD is only running on one of our load balancers at a time. This prevents the equal cost multipath problem where you're sending TCP streams across multiple servers and other IP collisions on the subnet so that they're not both using the same address at the same time. LDirectD manages the backends for us. It has configurations for health checks and removes the backends when they're unhealthy. And we submitted a patch upstream to add a fallback command configuration option for this, which we use to manage the IP address when the last backend disappears. So LDirectD will call this fallback command, and that brings down the IP address, and I'll get to how that is withdrawn in the next section. IPvS is the kernel module that some of you may have used already in the Linux Virtual Server project for load balancing. And Quagga is the software routing daemon that we've chosen to use to talk to our routers. Each load balancer has a constant peering with the network, and when it sees an address coming out of the designated block for any cast, it then advertises that to the network. So in the active-passive cluster, the passive has no IP addresses active, so it's not advertising anything, but the peering is already set up, so it can come up very quickly. When LDirectD removes the IP address on the last backend failure, that's when Quagga notices the interface go away, and it will remove the route from the advertisement on the BGP network, and the routing protocol will just then reconverge and find the next nearest location for this service. For a new service owner to get into the system, all they have to do is register an IP address in this allocated block and create a VIP config like they've already been doing for normal local configuration. And the only addition is adding this fallback command script to remove the address, which is already present on all our load balancers, so they can just copy the config setting in. And then they're done. They're already anycasting. Just by choosing the address in the right net block, it's automatically advertised by the Quagga software.
Yeah, the routers are configured already. Like, just instead of like to accept route advertisements from like, I don't know, 100 DNS servers, they are configured to accept /32 route advertisement from the load balancer. So the load balancer actually is part of this like trusted, and you don't have to spread this power like to all the other services.
So new services don't have to go through any approval process with the network to get BGP peering set up, to get ACLs configured. They can just get an address out of this designated block and it's ready to go. And then they're done, they're up. That's all that a client service needs to do. These are the links to the software we've used, if you want to look in the slides later. And that's about it. Are there any questions?
We actually decided to keep it very short, so there would be a lot of questions. So because I think the questions are the more interesting part. So like, so let's.
Hi, Lex Garsbrick, Cisco Ironport. I'm curious, how long does it take for the routes to reconverge for the failover to happen?
So in the event of a clean shutdown, when the software is exited, it brings down the peering cleanly, so it's under a second in observed convergence time. In an unclean shutdown, say the power is cut to the load balancers or something like that, we have our timers configured at 30 seconds dead interval. And so when the network doesn't see the advertisement in 30 seconds, it will then do this fast convergence in under a second.
Fair enough. So did I hear it correctly that only one side is active at a time, or do you have an active-active?
It's only single active at the moment in a load balancing pair. That's mostly for the TCP condition, so that we're not having to share connection tables between the load balancers.
And to guard against asymmetric paths?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks.
Hi, Rick Bradshaw, Argonne National Lab. I have a question about, do you do any kind of logging to see how often things are going down or coming back? I mean, is there any kind of data sets you deal with there?
Yep, it's all logged. We actually submitted another patch for L-Director-D upstream to provide health check result details in the L-Director-D log, so services can then query our logs to find out exactly why their backends are going up and down and how frequently.
Hi, David Nolan with Ariba. I've been doing Anycast internally for years as well. One of the things I found to be an issue is figuring out how to properly monitor the infrastructure so you can tell are all the nodes properly announcing their routes and are the routes being propagated correctly and all that. Sure. What are you doing to address those issues?
So the most used system we have for that is a small monitoring server in each site, which uses an in-band mechanism to discover the host names of the servers answering your queries. So each site monitor can then report back that it is getting the expected host set providing its answer. So for DNS, for example, in bind, there's the hostname.bind query you can issue. In LDAP, there's a LDAP entry with the host name of the machine. So when that doesn't match, then we can fire an alert and someone can check why the addresses are not, why the routes are not appropriately configured.
David Lang, Intuit. With the active passes, passive versus active-active for the load balancers, did you evaluate cluster IP as an option for doing active-active and decide against it, or just start off active-passive and never needed to move?
It's always been active-passive, and we've not had any driving need to move to active-active.
Well, and actually at some point we talked about keeping connection tables and stuff, but it's not something that our security team don't think that those seconds are worth having that information.
The IPvS connection sharing, as far as I'm aware, is still not authenticated at all. It uses a multicast group between the IPvS nodes, and you could send a connection update to that group to redirect a connection. So there was no significant driving need to fix that. We were looking at a signature-based mechanism for that to authenticate the updates, but we have not found the need for it yet.
I have a question. Well, you two have both moved on to other projects, so what's happening with this project?
What happened with this project now that both of us have moved on. Basically, we worked until all the infrastructure was stable and deployed, and that is actually other team that now is in Sydney, Australia, that take care of this, but it's still used, and more services are actually starting to use that. When we left, I think we had two services or something, and now like most of our internal services, like LDAP, proxy, like we have also log servers, they all use it.
So that actually reminded me of another question. One of the issues I've seen in deploying Anycast is often kind of a wariness, I would say, of the network folks allowing the systems folks to inject routes. All right, because now if the system folks start injecting the wrong routes, you can blow things up.
Sure.
So what are you doing? Are you doing like strict BGP filters? You can only announce /32 routes. You can only announce a small number of them.
Yeah, we actually have very friendly network people, which worked well. That was one of the driving reasons for our choice of BGP, because they could then apply fairly strict route maps onto our advertisements. So they only accept routes that are equal to /32 and only out of this designated net block for any cast. So we don't have the ability to take over any other address. Actually, most of the resistance was more from the services themselves rather than the network group, because they weren't familiar with any cast and didn't really understand where their traffic would go. But they have seen the under 1 second convergence times for failures and realized, actually, we like this. So.
Yeah, basically, when we did that, like as a centralized thing, it's not like that the network guys will have to talk with 100 sysadmins to figure out all this route advertising nightmare. They actually only had to agree with the two of us about how this scheme would work and which policies, and it was done blanket for everybody else, right?
Also, have you done anything in terms of doing back-end Anycast servers that are not Unix-based? We're doing Anycast for Winds now, which was a pain in the ass to get set up because of the way the Windows routing processes do their configuration, sure. But once we got it working, it's been rock solid stable.
So the nice thing about Anycast as a feature is the backend doesn't have to have any modification at all to use it. They're just a normal load balancer backend as if they were in a local VIP or in an Anycast VIP. So it actually reduces the configuration complexity for services to get involved with Anycast.
Okay, so all of your Anycast actual routing announcement nodes are load balancers. You're not doing anything from backends. Okay, so we're doing more Anycast directly from the backends without a load balancer.
Yeah. So the moving it to the load balancer is this way of simplifying it both for the backend services and for the network. It's all in one place.
Just kind of a silly question. Would you just ship out those units to the different offices and stuff and say, plug this into the network and it'll work? Or did you send teams of people?
It's a little more so first we started, like when we started deploying load balancers in all these locations, we used an appliance. So yes, when we migrated to LVS, we are actually running our load balancers in virtual instances in a cluster, so that is no shipment.
So it's just a standard Linux machine install. We get another machine like any other backend in the site, and we just apply our configuration to the machine, and it's up and running as a load balancer. We provide the IP addresses to the network guys for their peering, and it's all done. It's a really quick, easy setup.
Let's give him another.
Thank you.